This is Jordan Sekulow in Washington, D.C. The persecutors of Christians around the world, governments and organizations.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
I don't want to conflate religious discrimination, religious persecution. I don't ever want to be perceived that the United States of America does not have the moral clarity to move forward on this. I think we have the best system in the world.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow in Washington, D.C. My dad testified before a subcommittee at the United States Senate on the issue of religious persecution, the funding that goes to the U.S. State Department, what we can do more policy-wise, how we combat this persecution, how we need to talk about it, and even the language that we use to talk about it. I want to play now. This is Senator Jerry Moran from Kansas talking about the persecution in our history, what can change with religious persecution as we move forward, and does this administration, the Obama administration, understand the threat that this poses to people of faith around the world? Take a listen.
Senator Moran.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Thank you to our panelists for being here. In the course of history, is there an ebb and flow of religious persecution? It increases at points in time, decreases at others. And what would be the cause and effect, the factors that change the nature of the amount and intensity of religious persecution around the globe?
Well, I think an example, and the Secretary of State brought this up in testimony just a few days back, where he said, if you look at the violence that has occurred through the last century, that it's safer now than it was in the last century. But the last century was the Holocaust, where 6 million Jews and 6 million others were killed. The ebb and flow tends to be with a rise of nationalism, with a disregard of anyone being different, or anyone being different being deemed the enemy. And it starts in the education process. I know this is something that Ambassador Saperstein's been concerned with. If you teach hatred, you breed hatred. And I think this also goes back to what Senator Graham said. We have to understand that nation building here, I mean, that's not a popular word, but we have to engage it. And with regard to this kind of the ebb and flow, I think we're at a point in history right now that if we look at what is taking place just within the Middle East, I'm not even going to include most of North Africa, just the Middle East, there is a 9/11 every single day, and some days much worse. Just the sheer numbers of people being killed because of who they are. That includes the Baha'is, that includes Yazidis, that includes Christians, and of course with some other groups, it includes Jews. And I think we're in a point in history where they may not have the lethality yet in the sense of the systematic approach of the Nazis. They are certainly marking people because of what they believe in for extermination, and that does not bode well for the people.
Is it that you believe something different than those in power?
Well, certainly. And I think the Islamic State's a perfect example of this. ISIS, now called ISIL, now just called the Islamic State, has a view that if you are a Muslim that disagrees with them, you are an infidel. In fact, in one sense, they're worse than other religious groups. So that's why you're seeing this kind of mass destruction within the Muslim community. I was talking with a friend of mine, Canon Andrew White, who's the vicar of Baghdad for the Anglican Church in England. He's now in Jordan. And he said that if you look at the indiscriminate nature of ISIS, they have a very narrow view of their version of Sunni Islam. But you now have this pledging of allegiance by these other groups. We don't want to call it, you know, no one likes to say you're in a war, in a religion war, but we are, Senator, as you said. No one wants to say we're in war with Islam. Well, tell that to Khalif Ibrahim. It may not be the Islam that most of the people support, granted, but it is this version. And that this version is as toxic as the Nazis. And I lost a lot of family members in Nazi Germany, so I don't say that lightly. A whole side of my family was wiped out in Nazi Germany. So, but it's that same kind of systematic approach.
Folks, when we come back, remember the situation involving Pastor Saeed Abedini is ongoing, and the subcommittee here got involved. They started asking about this specific situation. It's one of those where you can point to a specific, and it involves an American family, and the persecution there. So we'll get into that in the next segment of the broadcast. If you can support the American Center for Law and Justice now, it's a great time. You can make the donation online at aclj.org or by phone. Call our toll-free number now, 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. Or make the donation, be part of our matching challenge at aclj.org. We'll be right back.
I should ever see.
In a dangerous world where there's growing chaos and conflict, the American Center for Law and Justice is there for you. Our commitment is clear. We're engaging the most critical issues of the day, protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam, to challenging an out-of-control IRS that unlawfully targets conservative Americans, to standing up for Israel, our most important ally, we could not do this work without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Remember, we have a matching challenge now. We don't do this often on the broadcast, but it's a way that if you're able to support the ACLJ financially, your donation is doubled. So it has double the impact financially for us. A $5 donation becomes $10, $10 becomes $20, and go on up from there. So it's a great time if you've thought about donating to the ACLJ, or if you have in the past, you've thought about doing it again, this is a great time. And you can make the donation online at aclj.org or by phone. This is a toll-free number you call to make a donation. If you prefer to do it that way, the number is 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. We're playing more from you, previewing our upcoming documentary on the persecution of Christians. And this is from a congressional hearing at the United States Senate. It was just a few weeks ago. And this is Ambassador Saperstein. He is the ambassador at large for the whole world. For international religious freedom. He's ambassador at the U.S. State Department. He's asked about Iran specifically in Saeed Abedini's case and talks about the ACLJ's work. This is official, appointed by President Obama. Take a listen.
If you could bring me up to date on Pastor Saeed and the latest efforts, our efforts to see his release.
Let me 20 seconds to just add to what Jay Sekulow said. In our IRF reports on 199 countries, every one of them has a section about social hostilities. Every one of them has a section on non-state actors when they're there. So we are fully reporting and engaging on it. And what we test in that is, does the government respond to it? It's failure to respond. It isn't just complicity. It isn't just what they're acting. They're complicit if they let it happen and they don't act. So there is at least some engagement on those issues. Look, there are limits when we don't have diplomatic relations with a country. But around the sidelines, I think this is well known, around the sidelines of the nuclear talks, Wendy Sherman has engaged over Saeed Abedini. There have been extensive conversations. We have used the Swiss and other international partners who have better relations to deal with American prisoners of all kinds, religious and non-religious, but that includes the religious prisoners of conscience who are American citizens and some who are not on these issues as well. But there are limitations, but on Saeed Abedini, that has gone on. We do know, and I know I want to commend the ACLJ on their extraordinary work for the Abedini family, but I have learned from them that his father is now allowed to visit him again. That is encouraging, but nothing is going to be satisfactory to the family or America until he is released.
Let me raise one other country, and that's China. And Bishop, let me address this to you. I think Pope Benedict and now Pope Francis has made efforts at outreach to China to reestablish a relationship. Is there any tangible progress that's being made in the protection of Christians and others in China as a result of the Pope's efforts?
Well, I haven't seen anything or monitored that as far as progress, but we're allowing the Vatican to take the lead on that, so we don't want to disrupt that process, and it's certainly one of dialogue and building some trust. But obviously there are tremendous challenges in the situation there with the underground church and the official church. We want to encourage, we don't want to do anything that would disrupt or harm that that dialogue that is that the Vatican has reached out to.
Well, I appreciate that you're halfway around the globe, but I do appreciate the Vatican's efforts, China and elsewhere. They've been an ally of the efforts to reduce religious persecution and promote religious freedom, and I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, and thanks to all of you for what you do for this cause. It actually seems to be a bigger and bigger problem all the time. I think as we step back, this problem just gets bigger. That's why I was so pleased the other day, as Senator Lankford mentioned in another hearing we had, that Secretary Kerry was at least using religious freedom as the term he was using. I think his predecessor often talked about the freedom to worship, seldom, if ever, talked about religious freedom. I was pleased with all the answers, and most importantly, Ambassador, pleased with your answer. In fact, when I looked at your testimony, I just started going through and circling the times I saw religious freedom used before Senator Lankford even brought that question up, and eventually I decided I was satisfied that the religious freedom was coming up as what you are focused on and what you do. As you know, I supported your nomination, and I was pleased to. At the time we talked about the special envoy for Near East and Central Asia, that the only way we'd get it passed was to leave some flexibility to the administration rather than shall appoint, it says may appoint. That was August of 2014. I don't see an appointment yet. I'd like to hear from you that you're advocating for that or don't think you need it. I think I heard earlier you had more than you could do. We've given you a real opportunity to get somebody to help you in this critical spot. What are you doing about that?
The internal deliberations I need to take a pass on, but let me just say the following. Before you came in, I talked about the fact that we have a very, very strong team on Near East who are working day in and day out about these communities in these countries here. If the president is, the White House is going to make a decision, should it select a special envoy, it would certainly be of help to us. We can use, as I indicated in response to Senator Graham's question, there are a number of specialized urgent tasks that have to be developed that if we had the staff, we could really do something about them. So that would clearly be an addition to it. If one of the challenges is, I don't believe in the legislation was funding for the special envoy. If I'm right about that, here again, the robbing Peter for Paul on this. If it's a value added, anyone specializing on any of the urgent countries that you've heard about or regions would be of immense help to us.
Well, I think in all the things that the State Department faces, if any of them have grown dramatically in need in the last couple of years, it's this one and shifting resources. Also, you know, if you do have this incredibly capable team that you just described, surely one of them would benefit from the imprimatur of special envoy. That's all you have to do. If one of them's that good, if one of them's that not that good, I'd suggest you replace them with somebody who is that good and make them the special envoy. This should not be a budget discussion. This is either important or it's not important. You can find the money to do this if you want to do it. You can let somebody go who you've currently got working on these issues if they're not good enough. If they are good enough, you can make them the special envoy and let them carry that into every room with them where they're trying to get something done. And on Pastor Abedini, as Mr. Perkins mentioned, last year we did see a good result of the discussion on Miriam Ibrahim from this discussion. As you mentioned, nobody's been more vigorous in trying to pursue this issue than Mr. Seklo and his group. I just find it hard to believe in all the things we've done with the Iranians that this has really been the kind of focus it should have been. We've given them millions of dollars of money back that we've held on to since 1979. Just asking them if they'd talk to us for another 60 days was that was the last deal made. That, you know, with a that had to be an interesting proposition for them. Just continue to talk for 60 days. We'll give you several hundred million dollars back we've held on to since 1969. And in that process, we couldn't get one person out of prison that nobody in this country believes should be there.
I will say this, Senator. Ambassador Saperstein is within weeks of being sworn into office, took a personal interest in Syed Abedini's case, not only willing to meet with the family, but working on multiple fronts, because there is these periphery discussions that take place, and I'm not disclosing anything that's not known. Frankly, and I want to be careful on this, but frankly, the discussions help keep him alive. I think we have to realize that just the discussion, this hearing, helps keep him alive. Comments from the President of the United States saying something about Syed Abedini keeps him alive. Your testimony, your statements keep him alive. These sideline discussions keep him alive. It doesn't answer the question on how we got to this place in the first place. And in other words, we were going to sit down with the Iranians and we didn't have some kind of preconditions. It's not just Syed Abedini, but get these Americans out of jail. Having said that, there's nothing we could do about that right now. But what we can do is this, insist that apart from any deals with Iran, any structured arrangements with Iran, that Syed Abedini, his family, are reunited, as other Americans need to be from Iran. And I do want to say again that Ambassador Saperstein has taken a unique and important interest in this case at a level that we have not seen previously. There's been support within the ambassador's office and his predecessor, but this is at a whole new level. And a lot of that's because of relationships and willingness and a commitment to this issue, which we're very appreciative. And the fact that the president met with Nagmeh Abedini. As someone asked me, how significant is that? They said, well, they're from a different political party, the other side of the political aisle here. And I said, well, it's the President of the United States talking about someone who's held captive in Iran. It helps keep him alive. And right now, until he's released, we got to keep him alive.
There's more coming up on the show, folks, and more from that congressional hearing. But I want to encourage you to support the ACLJ financially if you're able to now. You call our toll-free number, 877-989-2255. It's a great time because we have a matching challenge. Your donation, it's double the impact. It's effectively doubled for us. So even a $5 donation becomes $10. We can continue to do this work that we do around the world. You can make the donation online at aclj.org or by phone, 877-989-2255.
The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere. In a dangerous world where there's growing chaos and conflict, the American Center for Law and Justice is there for you. Our commitment is clear. We're engaging the most critical issues of the day, protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam, to challenging an out-of-control IRS that unlawfully targets conservative Americans, to standing up for Israel, our most important ally, we could not do this work without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. I'm in Washington, D.C. We're going back to the congressional hearing. It was at the United States Senate on persecution. You're going to hear from Senator Roy Blunt from Missouri. He is talking to Ambassador Saperstein, David Saperstein, who is the ambassador at large for international religious freedom at the U.S. State Department. Goes through the normal ambassador, the confirmation process. He's asked about Iran, talks about Saeed Abedini, the nuclear talks as well. And we also talk about persecution. What does it mean and the difference between persecution and discrimination? Take a listen.
I wonder, Mr. Sekulow, since the ambassador probably can't talk about this, and by the way, Ambassador, I'm very pleased to hear others working on this have a sense that you're headed in the direction that I thought you would be whenever I stood in the well of the Senate and his members came up and asked, why are you voting for him? I said, because I think he's committed to get this job done, and I'm glad to hear that. I do wonder why in a country that appears to have so much at stake, or not, I'm not sure how serious the negotiations are, but why the message of the level of good faith this would create doesn't get through to them. When the President of the United States is doing this, why do you have any idea why he is that important to them?
Well, you would think as a confidence-building measure in discussions like this that they would release the American, just as a confidence-building measure. But I think we are looking at that through our eyes and not through the eyes of their own experience within the regime that is controlled in a different way. They have it's not a real judiciary. It's not really an elected legislative body. It is run by the Revolutionary Guard and the Ayatollah, and that's the reality of what we're dealing with. And I think we tend to look, Senator, it's puzzling to all of us. Why would you not release this American? We actually saw the documents upon which charges have been made against people like Saeed Abedini. We've seen these in other cases, too. And they'll say they're an enemy of the state because of their religious belief. They do the same thing with the Baha'is. It was said earlier by the senator. It's the same kind of thing. Why they picked on the American, I hope it's not as a political bargaining chip, but right now if it's involved in the political process and that's helping him keep him alive, then my job as his advocate is to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am very pleased to be here today discussing this very important topic of religious freedom. My great-great-grandmother, in fact, my mom told me this as a child, says, why did she come to America? They left Scandinavia for economic freedom, but also for religious freedom. And that is why our family came to the United States years ago. In light of that, Mr. Perkins, thank you for being here and for your testimony. In your view, has the current administration shown moral clarity on issues of religious freedom?
Under the International Religious Freedom Act, this is to be a priority in our foreign policy. Our training for our foreign service officers is to be a priority. Diplomats requires the diplomats to meet with NGOs to promote religious freedom. Now, you've probably had more interaction with ambassadors than I have, but I have met with foreign ambassadors. In my conversations, this has never been a topic that has been brought up to them as a priority in our foreign policy. In fact, it's been contrary. So to answer your question, Senator, I would say no. They have not spoken with clarity. It has not been a priority that has been put forth by this country, this administration. And as a result, we see record levels of religious persecution. And according to the experts that track this, it's not about to crest. It's continuing to rise. In the foreseeable future, does not look good.
Thanks, Mr. Perkins. Question for the bishop, and I say this in the context of having spent 6 years living in China back in the 90s. I was an expat with a Fortune 20 company there, launching operations to sell products into a Chinese market. In light of the Catholic Church's difficulties with the Chinese government regarding the appointment of bishops and freedom of worship, has the United States government played a positive role for the Church and pressed the Chinese government to allow the Vatican to appoint its own bishops?
I'm not an expert in diplomacy. I'm a pastor, but the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, that we want to allow the Vatican to take a lead in this, and If anything, we want to open up some space. Yes.
Are you getting help from the U.S. government?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But just as a good physician,
not sure would certainly not be.
That's not a yes.
Okay.
As a good physician, first you do no harm, and so we want to be sure that we don't do harm in opening up some space for dialogue.
Yeah, and I understand it's a sensitive topic, having lived there for 6 years. But I'm hoping to do all we can in terms of government here to help the cause there of the freedom for
Appreciate
the Catholic Church. You bet. Mr. Perkins, we've talked a lot about religious freedom abroad today, but as Matthew 7:5 tells us, we want to be careful that we're not looking at the speck in our brother's eye when we have a log sticking out of our own. Is the U.S. in a position today to be talking about religious liberty overseas when we clearly have a lot of work to do in our own country?
I think that's an excellent question, Senator, and I think the lack of priority on religious freedom that we have placed here domestically in our policies does send a message internationally. I think there's a correlation between the growing intolerance of religious freedom, not the freedom of worship, but we had that discussion a moment ago, but the growing intolerance toward religious freedom here at home, i.e. in the marketplace, is giving rise to persecution abroad. And the reason I say that is because when we no longer make it a priority here domestically, that sends a message to bad actors abroad that America no longer puts a high priority in religious freedom. So we don't have to worry about them acting against us or moving against us based on that. I mean, you look at the case of the HHS mandate with the Hobby Lobby case, which had to go all the way to the Supreme Court to give that private held business the right to exercise their religion under the Religious Freedom Act. So I think to your question, Senator, absolutely. We need to do a better job here at home.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Perkins. Mr. Sekulow, you have a thought on that?
Well, Senator, I want to be careful and put this into perspective. I don't think we can compare a situation in the United States which would be, I would classify as acts of religious discrimination that do exist. And in Hobby Lobby was, in my view, an example, as Tony said, shared the same thing. But that is not on the same level of religious persecution where people are having their throats slit, being crucified or beheaded. So I think the question is, even when we get Supreme Court cases we disagree with the Supreme Court on, I would not trade the U.S. system for any system in the world. And I still think we have the ability, because of the constitutional framework we have, and that we do protect, at the end of the day, we protect religious freedom. It may take court action, but at least we have a court action you could take to do it. These countries don't have that. So I'm always careful to compare. I don't want to conflate religious discrimination and religious persecution, but I think I don't ever want to be perceived that the United States of America does not have the moral clarity to move forward on this, because my grandfather, like your family, came from Russia, was a fruit peddler in Brooklyn, New York, and his grandson, despite Supreme Court cases in between that we probably would have agreed with or not agreed with, but his grandson gets to appear before this distinguished committee and argue cases at the Supreme Court of the United States. I think we have the best system in the world, even with its faults.
Completely agree, and I'm out of time, and how can I top that?
Folks, remember, we've got another half hour coming up on Jay Sekulow Live, more about the persecution of Christians. It's something we have to speak out about. It's something we have to be educated about, and we'll be talking about it when we come back on the show. But I encourage you, if you're able to support us financially, the ACLJ, you can make a donation now, and we have a matching challenge. What that means is your donations is effectively doubled, double the impact. So 10 becomes 20, and I can go through the list there, but you can figure that out. If you're able to make the donation, call now, 877-989-2255. You can make a donation by phone or online at aclj.org.
Now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255, or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. There was a congressional hearing recently at the United States Senate. My dad testified at and about persecution, about what the U.S. government can do to combat it. You're going to hear from U.S. Senator John Bozeman. He's a U.S. senator from Arkansas, talking about what Congress can do and can they do more to combat persecution. And, you know, it's not easy. It's a battle you've got to have, you know, in the with governments. You've got to have it with allies. And, of course, in situations where those in control, like think about the territories under the control of the Islamic State right now, who are enemies. But there are allies as well who we could be putting more pressure on as a government to take better care of their minority religious communities, specifically in the Muslim world where you've got the Christian minorities, and to seek justice for those who have been wronged. Take a listen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you all so much for being here. Mr. Ambassador, one of the things that I hear about right at the top of the list at home is just the concern that we have all of this stuff going on overseas, but the administration just simply, for whatever reason, won't verbalize what's actually happening. And I'll give you an example. When the administration publicly responded to the beheading of 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians in Libya, they failed to mention that their faith, their religious belief, was the primary motivator of their murders. As the Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, can you explain why the administration simply refuses to call by name the religious persecution of Jews and Christians by ISIS? Again, that's just a basic, if we don't understand the problem and we don't identify the problem, we don't talk about it, I don't see how you can solve the problem.
The administration was absolutely clear that the cops, the people who were killed were cops, and that they were killed because of their religious identity. The controversy was about one time in, I think, an L.A. Times op-ed in which the president referred to it just as Christians, yeah. Which also raises the religious identity as a defining aspect here. But he himself and others in the administration throughout the State Department had talked very openly about the fact these were cops, and we have spoken out on behalf of the Coptic community over and over and over again. It is a priority for me.
You agree then that they were killed because they were...
I think it's clear that was the reason. I think it's clear that that's a reason a lot of the minorities that they kill are killed because of their religious identity and belief, and that includes the Christian communities of the Near East and the Coptic community of those in Egypt who are working in Libya.
Good, because, you know, us on the committee, because of being on the committee, have traveled a lot. We've all been in the Middle East many, many times. And I don't think I've ever sat down with an ambassador or somebody in one of those countries that they wouldn't readily admit the same thing. I mean, this is just, you know, it's foolish not to tread so lightly. After Egypt and the United Arab Emirates carried out airstrikes in Libya in response to the beheading of 21 Coptic Christians, a spokesman for the Department of Defense said that the U.S. did not support these efforts. Again, should we publicly be condemning our allies that are basically trying to support their people that of their country, again, trying to protect their religious beliefs?
That's a statement I'm not familiar with. You would have to address it to the Department of Defense.
But would you agree with that?
With?
Do you agree that we should come out and say, you know, that again, we don't support the Egyptians for trying to protect their people and their religious beliefs?
I think Egypt should protect their citizens, their religious beliefs. I think Sisi, who has many problematic actions in the broader human rights field, has made some progress in terms of confronting extremism, extremist interpretations of Islam, and calling on Islamic religious leaders to begin to push back very hard about that. And he has been more open to the Coptic community than his predecessors, but there are still problems, and we are dealing with an ongoing basis with the Egyptian government over the problems that exist of the rights of the Coptic community to live openly and freely with equal protection in Egypt.
There's more coming up on the show, folks, and more from that congressional hearing, but I want to encourage you to support the ACLJ financially if you're able to now. You call our toll-free number, 877-989-2255.
In a dangerous world where there's growing chaos and conflict, the American Center for Law and Justice is there for you. Our commitment is clear. We're engaging the most critical issues of the day, protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam, to challenging an out-of-control IRS that unlawfully targets conservative Americans, to standing up for Israel, our most important ally, we could not do this work without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere.
Sekulow Live. Remember, we have a matching challenge now. We don't do this often on the broadcast, but it's a way that if you're able to support the ACLJ financially, your donation is doubled. So it has double the impact financially for us. A $5 donation becomes $10, $10 becomes $20, and go on up from there. So it's a great time if you've thought about donating to the ACLJ, or if you have in the past, you've thought about doing it again, this is a great time. You can make the donation online at aclj.org or by phone. This is a toll-free number you call to make a donation. If you prefer to do it that way, the number is 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. Remember, this persecution, it's all Christians. It's the Orthodox faith. It's the Protestant faith. It's the Catholic faith, all facing the persecution and destruction of Christian property, of the Christian history, the heritage that we're seeing of the faith. Specifically, one of the issues we have to combat, folks, is the governments who are allies of the United States who don't do enough to prevent persecution of religious minorities, and usually we're talking about Christians here in this situation, or they don't seek justice. They don't. Those who are should be held accountable for their actions. Even the citizens who are outside the government but who persecute, that they need to be held accountable. They've got to face the justice system. So my dad asked directly for this U.S. Senate subcommittee to put forward an amendment to freeze the assets of groups and nations. So it includes, groups like ISIS, but also nations, countries that we may be allied with who are not doing enough. They aren't taking positive steps to prevent persecution and to seek justice for those who were persecuted. Take a listen.
Right. So I guess what I'm saying is it's not one thing. It's just thing after thing. The delay in your nomination, the fact that that was vacant so long, the fact that we still don't have the special envoy to promote religious freedom of religious minorities. Again, and I think you would agree that lots of tiptoeing, around the these statements that come out as to what's going on. It's just one thing after another, and as a result, I think Americans are very, very concerned about, again, not identifying the problem and treading so lightly as to, calling a spade a spade.
I think there is legitimacy to different narratives, and another narrative would be this president in India dealing with religious freedom as bluntly as he's done at the National Prayer Breakfast, being so forceful in terms of the imprimatur that the administration has given me to empower me in the work that I'm doing, the fact of how open the entire State Department has been to this religious freedom agenda as a crucial agenda, whether it is a change or just different things going on at the same time. I actually think there is a legitimate narrative that says that this is an administration, a Secretary of State, and a president that cares deeply about this issue of religious freedom.
Right. No, I understand. And yet, again, as I travel about Arkansas and other states, the average person hasn't understood that narrative.
If that's the case, then we have work to do to help bring what is a very real aspect of the work of the United States government more clearly to the American people. So I take that challenge seriously.
Thank you.
May I just 10 seconds to respond to the bishop and your colleague here? In addition to everything we've done on Uyghur Muslims and Tibetan Buddhists and the Falun Gong and all the other religious groups, in every report, and back to when I chaired the commission, and it's the first commission, everything that they have done, we have spoken out over and over again about the rights of the church to name its own bishops. We've spoken out on behalf of Bishop Ma. It has been a consistent message that we've done. So I want to reassure you that there's been a very strong positioning of the United States government on behalf of the rights of the Catholic community to choose to work with the Vatican as their organizing religious authority.
Okay, so I'm going to take my 15 seconds back that was. Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just close with a question for the bishop and Mr. Sekulow and Mr. Perkins. You all have highlighted various things about the United States' obligation under international and domestic law to uphold and protect our religious freedoms. If you just had one thing, a message to us as to what you feel like Congress needs to be doing, could you, talk to us for just a second about that?
Sure, and just reiterating the message as I visited the displaced persons in Kurdistan, I promised them that I would bring their stories back to the U.S. And so I hope to do that, and I brought their message here today, protection for the religious minorities in that part of the world, in Iraq, and aid, humanitarian aid, and development, health care, and education.
Senator, we would request that the committee and through the Congress amend the International Religious Freedom Act to include non-state actors, and that as part of that, that Section 405 would bar from entering the United States and freeze the assets of any government officials or their agents who have engaged in particular acts of religious persecution and violations, work with our European allies to ban from entry and freeze assets of government officials who have engaged in these type of activities. And I think that choking off the money would do a lot. Under the International Religious Freedom Act right now, it's non-state actors aren't covered. But if we include non-state actors within that, and I think we have to, ISIS is operating like a state, first of all. If you include non-state actors, all of a sudden we can freeze assets, we can deny access, we can deny entry, we can move on visas, we can move on passports. And I think when you got U.S. recruits, we need to put non-actors inside the International Religious Freedom Act. That needs to be an amendment authorized by the Congress.
I would again say that today is a significant step forward in sending the message that the Senate, along with the House that's been holding hearings on related matters, is taking this serious. Now, in D.C., in the city of meetings, it might not mean a whole lot. Internationally, though, the fact that you have called a hearing on this topic is sending a strong message. In addition to what Mr. Sekulow said, I don't think we need new laws necessarily at this point. But I would urge you, as you hold further hearings on this, that you call members of the State Department forward, the secretary, and just ask as to whether or not the International Religious Freedom Act is actually being followed. There's no evidence to suggest that it's being followed by the letter of the law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ambassador, you're the right guy at the right time. Whatever problems we've had in the past, let's try to correct them in the future. A hearing without action is just a meeting. I didn't convene a meeting. I want it to result in action. Thank you all. This has been one of the most impressive hearings I've ever attended. I think I'm better off for it, and I hope the committee will take your suggestions to heart, and I predict we will. If there are no further questions this afternoon, senators may submit additional questions for the record. We will keep the record open until Friday, March 13th, and request the Department of State's response within 30 days. The subcommittee stands in recess, subject to the call of the chair.
There's more coming up on the show, folks, and now we're going to shift. You know, we come back in the next segment, we're going to talk about the rise of ISIS and the book that I know many of you have read, and what we can do also to combat the rise of ISIS, what the U.S. can do, how you can speak out as well. We'll be talking about it all when we come back from the break. I encourage you now, if you can support the ACLJ financially, we don't do this often on the show, you can make a matching challenge. Your donation is doubled. You can make that donation online at aclj.org. That's a quick and easy way to do so. Or by phone, by calling our toll-free number, 877-989-2255. One more time, that's 877-989-2255. Are we blind to all of these? In an effort to our peace, this restless feeling of unease.
The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere. In a dangerous world where there's growing chaos and conflict, the American Center for Law and Justice is there for you. Our commitment is clear. We're engaging the most critical issues of the day, protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam, to challenging an out-of-control IRS that unlawfully targets conservative Americans, to standing up for Israel, our most important ally, we could not do this work without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
And what is now has been before. Over and over, it's been ignored. It is a heart, part of a soul. The slaughter's in.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're still talking about the persecution of Christians. This is about ISIS. We're going to go into that now in some of our discussions we've had. You know, we wrote the book Rise of ISIS. It's a number one New York Times bestseller. And this is a new kind of persecution we're seeing on this kind of widespread scale. And it's not that people in minority faith groups and Christians in the Muslim world have not been facing persecution. But now we're seeing groups attempting to go and annihilate the Christians who have existed in some of these countries and territories now under control of ISIS since the times of Christ. So let's take a listen as we discuss that with our team at the ACLJ right now.
We're talking about ISIS and the threat. Let me read to you from page 40 of the book. This was a statement by the Caliph Ibrahim, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is his war name, if you will. So to arms, to arms, soldiers of Islam, fight, fight. Rush your Muslims to your state. It is your state. Syria is not for Syrians, and Iraq is not for Iraqis. The land is for the Muslims, all Muslims. This is my advice to you. If you hold to it, you will conquer Rome and own the world, if Allah wills. So the idea here is a global conquest.
Oh, absolutely. They have they control territory that's the size of the state. And you know, when you listen to that, he is trying to rewind the clock to the glory days of the Islamic Caliphate, when Rome and the Roman Empire was considered to be their primary opposition. So he has ambitions, as you said, that are absolutely global. And when he talks like that, he's tapping into a deep desire amongst millions of Muslims, particularly young Muslim men, to become part of a new caliphate, a new glory days.
Jordan, when we look at the recruiting efforts, we talked about this in the earlier broadcast. We look at the recruiting efforts. You see the beheadings. We're horrified. They're using it as a recruiting effort. And the question is right now, what's the sense in Washington on the nature of this threat?
That it's a significant threat. We are engaged in the same fight that we were engaged in over a decade ago, even before the 9/11 attacks. It was a fight on this growing threat of radical Islam to the United States homeland, and it's continuing today.
Let me read you again from the book. Grandiose threats are nothing new in the jihadist world, but what makes ISIS especially dangerous is its possession of both the means and will to carry out its threats. It is the best equipped, richest terrorist force in the world. And one of the targets of this group clearly has been Christians. The Christian persecution that has gone on has been outrageous. They're marking the homes of Christians with a symbol that stands for Nazarene. I had the opportunity to speak with the vicar of Baghdad, Andrew White, who was serving the church in Baghdad, an Episcopal priest that was serving in Baghdad. And it was just horrific. In fact, I want to play 2 minutes from that interview that we did in Jerusalem. He was out of Iraq and in Jerusalem. That's the only way we could do the interview. Take a listen.
When you are ministering to these, to your congregants, to the people in your church, to these Christians, and I want those that are watching this in the West to understand the scope and nature. You're talking about an ancient Christian people that have been in this region since the beginning of Christendom, and it's been completely wiped out by this ISIS group. And you've been ministering to these people in Baghdad. I have to ask you this question, and Canon White, I know this is tough, and Andrew, we've been friends a long time. It's your people in your church that are being killed. How are you dealing with this? How are you dealing with this? How are you explaining this to the other believers in the community?
To have your people murdered in front of you, to have the people you love slaughtered, is so terrible. There is no easy answer or easy solution. And yet we know these people who are our enemies, we are called still to love them. And my people say to me, they call me Daddy or Abuna. They say, Daddy, has the rest of the world forgotten about us? Do they not know what's happening to us? And I say to them, no, my darlings, they are with us. Our brothers and sisters in the West, you might not be experiencing this torture that we are experiencing, but we are your brothers and sisters. We are your family. And we need your help. We need your support. We can't do this on our own. The job is so huge, just getting food and cradles and blankets for people. But with you, we can do it.
So we know that ISIS is focusing in on Christians. That's been Christians and Muslims that disagree with them. But they've really gone after the Christian community, and the brutality has been incredible. But now let's turn our attention to Hamas. And let me read you something. Again, this is found in our book. This is actually page 43 of Rise of ISIS. This is not information you're going to get anyplace else. We really encourage you to get this book and study it. You become the expert on a topic. We may be looking at the 30-year war here. I mean, this could go on for, it's intergenerational. So we have got to be understanding who we're fighting. We have to understand the nature of the enemy. So now let's talk about Hamas. They have the same goal, which is domination, the creation of a Sharia state, an Islamic state. But here's their goal, where Hamas is focusing on Jews, ISIS was focusing on Christians and other Muslims. Here's Hamas from their charter, page 43 of our book. Our battle with the Jews is long and dangerous, requiring all dedicated efforts. It's a phase which must be followed by succeeding phases, a battalion which must be supported by battalion after battalion of the divided Arab and Islamic world until the enemy is overcome and the victory of Allah descends. So David, Hamas in its sights, again, is the creation of the Islamic State, but it is the elimination of Jews. It's not just the elimination of Israel. It's much broader than that. But clearly, Israel and Jews are the primary target of Hamas, while ISIS is focusing on Muslims that disagree, Yazidis, other religious minorities, and especially Christians.
Absolutely. Hamas wants to make, right now its goal is to make life in Israel so intolerable through terrorist attacks, raining missiles down on the civilian population, that the Jewish population of Israel grows disheartened. And if they ever got the kind of military power that ISIS has, they would spring out of Gaza, they would launch out of Gaza and try to attack and kill as many Jews as they possibly could. The only thing right now that is keeping the Jews of Israel from facing the same fate of the Christians of Iraq is the might of the Israel Defense Forces.
Folks, let me thank all of you who get involved. We need your activism. We need you to sign a petition or join a committee, and you've spoken out for the persecuted church. You've spoken out on issues here in the United States and around the world, and hundreds of thousands of you do that when we need your support and when we need you to speak out, and that's a big contribution to the ACLJ. We also need financial support. And for those of you who are in a situation where you're able to donate to the American Center for Law and Justice, or you've thought about donating to the ACLJ, this is a great time to do so, because your donation will be effectively doubled. It's called a matching challenge. It's going on right now. You can donate by phone. You call our toll-free number. That's 877-989-2255. Again, that's 877-989-2255. 2255, or go to aclj.org and make your contribution. Be part of our matching challenge online. Have your donation and the impact of that donation doubled. Make a donation online at aclj.org. Now my heart is crying, deep beneath the voice is lying. I can't stand to see this evil.
Now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.